I'm Fred Earnest, President and CEO of Vista Gold. We own the Mount Todd Project based in the Northern Territory of Australia. We trade on the NYSE American and the Toronto Stock Exchange under the symbol VGZ.
Fred, good to see you, and thanks for joining us. Yeah, in fact, definitely thanks for joining us here at Zurich at the moment for a conference there. How's that going?
Yeah, it's good. You know, there's a really good feel, a vibe about the conference this year. Gold price obviously at record levels, and that always seems to make the conference a little bit more buoyant.
Funny that. Gold prices, I'm putting a skip in everyone's step. I think that sort of kicked off when we were at Dan and PDAC. I think you were there too. People got a little bit excited, but sitting over 2,300, heading towards 2,350 is quite exciting indeed. Look, I'm interested in how companies like you take advantage of this. You're a sort of advanced development stage, but you've had to change the way that you're thinking about coming at this project. And you've talked about staged approach. Firstly, why the change in thinking?
Yeah, certainly. You know, we designed Mount Todd and the feasibility study that we completed and announced 2 years ago and updated in March last month was designed at 50,000 tons a day. You know, we have a 7 million ounce reserve. And, you know, we really were targeting a transaction, a partnership arrangement with one of the senior gold producers. You know, the project of a deposit of that size merits this. And at 50,000 tons a day, we could generate almost 500,000 ounces of gold per year. But the number of companies that can write the kind of checks that you need to write to build billion-dollar projects is a pretty limited number. And as time has gone on and the transactional environment of the last couple of years has been, M&A has been focused on mergers between producers. It hasn't involved developers very much at all. And so, you know, we feel a need to be in control of our own destiny. And one of the ways that we do that is reducing the capex of the project and looking at how can this project be built in a way that allows its ultimate expansion, but to bootstrap our way in or appeal to a broader range of potential partners.
Yeah, I mean, you've gone from a sort of $1 billion capex down to sort of under $350 million capex option available to you. In terms of trying to understand the efficiencies or slight loss of efficiencies there, obviously with scale come cost benefits, but absolutely, with this kind of smaller plant, do you lose much?
Well, we do. One of the things that we've done in going to the smaller scale in the large scale project, we contemplated owning and operating our own mining fleet. We've now contemplated having a contract miner. We've always had contract power as part of the package, but there are some losses in efficiency that you have to give up when you go to a smaller scale.
Right, but the point is here, one, you get into production, you get revenues flowing, and I think most investors would look at this and go, well, I'm interested in anything which is a kind of less dilutory form of funding. So in terms of the kind of funding options that you are available to companies like you, I mean, what else did you look at?
So one of the advantages of being in Australia is that there's a funding mechanism called the Northern Australia Infrastructure Fund, or NAIF, that has capital available, and we've had conversations with them. Certainly that would be part of the debt package. You know, we continue to be strongly interested in bringing in a partner to the project. We've been very true to our commitments to minimize dilution of our shareholders. You know, today we have 121 million shares issued and outstanding. And the way that we create leverage, the way that we create significant rewards for shareholders is not diluting them. I listened to a speaker, one of the keynote speakers this morning at the conference said, dilution is a cancer. And, you know, we certainly agree with that. You know, it takes money to build projects, but the more that we can do to finance projects or develop them in a way that minimizes the dilution to shareholders means there's more money that we can make for shareholders.
Right. And then let's talk about this kind of scale of the stage development, the smaller starting package. You're still looking at, you know, 150,000 to 200,000 ounce a year production, which is, you know, not not so shabby, quite frankly.
But it's not an insignificant mine. I mean, when you look at it that way, you know, and I think that was one of the hurdles that we had to get over, you know, in our thinking, was that we'd been so tuned into, you know, this nearly 500,000 ounces per year, top 3 to 5 gold producer in the country, you know, and when you step back and you look at it and you say that, you know, for more than 20 years, this mine could produce 150 to 200,000 ounces a year, year in, year out. That's a very, very significant, very solid gold mine. And, you know, and it's a great place to start.
So it's a great place to start. But obviously, it always comes down to margin, right? So I think with the larger project, you were talking, you know, sub $1,000 ASIC. What will it look like? And I asked this question because when we've been speaking to CEOs this year, they're saying there's a new reality out there in terms of the kind of cost base for gold production, you know, and about 10 or so CEOs, and saying people need to understand a new realistic number, somewhere between $1,300 and $1,450 ASIC US. Where does this fit into that kind of sliding scale?
You know, actually Mount Todd is very robust. The new feasibility study estimated the all-in sustaining costs at $960 an ounce for the large project, and at the smaller scale project, which is a year ago, our numbers were somewhere around $1,100. So maybe add 10% to that. You know, I mean, we're still below the numbers that other people are talking about, and I think that with a little bit of work, you know, that I think that we'll be able to stay in that $1,100 to $1,200 an ounce range with a smaller scale project.
So you're making money. So again, sticking with the funding, because this is the important bit here. You know, we've seen sort of 3 years of, you know, quite dreadful equities action. We've also seen a kind of cost base rising. So we just discussed, because, you know, supply chain issues, COVID delays, and ramping up of costs across the board. The fact that the margin that you guys make will kind of determine, even if you kind of factor in NPV 8, 10, 15, whatever you want to go for, the margin will determine your ability to get financed and from a kind of wider pool of financing. So given the advanced stage of this, where are you with discussions? When do you start those discussions? Are you in discussions? What do they look like?
We've not started the discussions other than preliminary discussions with, you know, banks in Australia and the Northern Australia Infrastructure Fund. You know, the feasibility study of a smaller scale project is a year out, and so we've not started having those discussions. The discussions that we are having are the continued discussions with potential partners and signing confidentiality agreements. And, you know, obviously that would be our first choice, you know, to bring in the project development operating expertise that we don't have in our organization today, rather than build that capacity and then build it ourselves.
Right. Okay. Well, in which case, let's try to work out what people have got. Okay, in terms of timing, great on feasibility. In terms of what are you doing for the next year? What does the news flow look like for the next year? Obviously, you've just done this deal with Wheaton just for Christmas. I think you've taken 10 and another 10 in the first half of this year. What do you do with the money?
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, you're right. We will get the second $10 million the latter part of June. But we've commenced a drilling program on the northern end of the deposit. That program is aimed at there's a bit of that part of the resource is estimated using RC drilling. In the past, we've seen an uptick or an improvement in grade when we drill with core, and we see more discrete boundaries and intervals. So we're drilling. We've got a 6,000 to 7,000 meter drill program that's in progress right now. There'll be a new resource estimate. We'll start announcing drill results here in the next month or so. We'll have the first 4 to 6 holes that we'll be able to announce. And then obviously start of the feasibility study later in the year when we wrap up the drilling program. Those will be key catalysts.
Right. And so explain to anyone watching this who may be saying, well, hang on, you got 7.8 million of measured and indicated. Okay, that's big.
It is big.
Will the grade increases dramatically change the economics of this thing? I.e., why spend the money in what is you know, still a tough market. Gold price is doing its thing, but I think equities need to sort of, that the benefits of it need to kind of cascade down through the equities at the moment. So why rush into spending money when you don't need to?
Well, part of it is, as you can imagine, you know, Wheaton wanted to make sure that we're going to be spending part of the money on it, on advancing the project, and we committed to a drilling program. The target that we've selected is a shallow target. It'll be low stripping ratio ounces that we're targeting, and while it may not substantially change the grade, it could change it enough that we change the mine schedule, and that we actually have some material that's lower strip ratio, essentially the same grade or maybe a little better in the early part of the first several years of the project, but with a lower strip ratio. And that's the appeal to us, is that it has the opportunity to affect project economics through lowering initial costs. And obviously that depends on the success of the drilling and what we see, but that's the target and the thinking that's gone into justifying this as the target for the drilling. It's not the addition of ounces, but rather the definition of boundaries and quantifying, you know, where we may see better grade material that's lower stripping ratio material.
Right. Okay. So with the higher grade, I guess that's another kind of anti-dilutory measure there in itself, if you're making more margin sooner. But in terms of this drilling, do you need to do that in the context of conversations with some of these mine builders, these kind of, you know, outsourced groups? Because they're going to need to define where you locate and position, whether it be plant or tailings or et cetera. I mean, so where are you with that, with a kind of this?
Those things are very well defined. You know, given the fact that Mount Todd operated previously, there's an existing plant site that the civil works have been done for. There's a tailings impoundment facility that has capacity for 80 million tons, roughly the first third of the reserves, with a couple of operating raises. We have a freshwater storage reservoir that we're going to raise the dam 2 meters. You know, a lot of the infrastructure work is already done. And so we don't have to do drilling. We've already done geotech drilling in the plant site for foundation designs, things like that. It's really, much of that work has already been done as part of the previous feasibility studies. It's locked in.
Right. And in terms of other costs that you may incur pre-FID on this one, you clearly permitted, which is great. But as a former operating site, things like, you know, dewatering and such like, are you obliged to do anything, whether it be on associated with the permit or associated with the deal you did with Wheaton? I mean, where are you spending your time?
You know, we have the permits for the project. The operating permit, the MMP is approved. Our EIS is approved. We have an authorization under the Aboriginal Areas Protection Authority legislation. You mentioned dewatering. We substantially dewatered the pit several years ago. Our water management strategy right now is we capture the acid rock drainage that comes off the waste rock dump, and we put it in the pit for 2 or 3 years, treat it. We'll likely be treating water later this year during the dry season. And a year from now, at the end of the wet season, the pit will be almost dry again. So it's a kind of a cycling thing that we've done to more efficiently manage water. But there's something on the order of 2 or 3 million cubic meters of water in the pit right now, a very small quantity, relatively speaking.
Okay, and can I talk about the share register? Obviously, with a company like yourself, you know, sitting sort of whatever 70, 80 million bucks, depending on the time of the week, market cap. Sun Valley is a big institutional shareholder, you know, sitting around sort of 16-17% of the company. You're at the point now in terms of the advanced nature of this, or advancing nature of the project, and it, even with a smaller project, is of a scale that, you know, should be of interest, I say, maybe to other kind of like to mid tiers or other funding groups. But how do you change, or, you know, when do you start looking to change the makeup of the share register? And, you know, I think you're, you know, the institutional component is less than 30% at the moment. How does that evolve over the next year as you work towards that FID?
You know, that's a very interesting question, because Sun Valley has been a long time shareholder. Peter Palmedo has, you know, his advice is don't be in a hurry to develop Mount Todd. And, you know, he's been a strong advocate that the price of gold is going higher. Today, from where we sit today, we'd say Peter's absolutely right. Is it going to go higher yet? You know, that's something that none of us know, but certainly there's a lot of buoyancy and a lot of enthusiasm here in Zurich right now that it is going to go higher. At some point, you know, the conversation about a development strategy will have to be had. And it will be interesting to see if Sun Valley at that point in time is supportive of that or not. But, you know, right now, you know, we've enjoyed the very patient and encouraging support of things to, you know, de-risk the project, advance the project without committing to a development decision from Sun Valley Gold. And you know, how much... There's going to be a balance, and you know, I have a really good relationship with Peter, and we sit down and chat heart to heart, you know, at least a couple of times a year, and it's one of those discussions that sometime we're gonna have to broach, but right now we've been able to. You know, take advantage of Sun Valley's exhaustive research and their perspective and be patient.
Right, but which I understand. So I guess there's two components. That is, like, one, as a long term shareholder, they may and she's one or two paths. You know, sit or devolve. You know, as in maybe look to offload some of this as an institutional groups look to get into projects like yours. So whether somebody's, you know, whatever they decide to do is one thing. I'm talking about your focus, which is, you know, doing the rounds and talking to those corporates and seeing if they're ready to kind of lean in and at what point they're ready to lean in, because that kind of, I guess that kind of retail behavior doesn't necessarily help, you know, advanced development stories if they get scared. So, are you doing the rounds? When will you start doing the rounds? You know, what's a number that would look good to you in terms of percentage of institutional shareholders?
Well, you know, we're continually talking to people, and you know, the ideas about, you know, strategic investors and, you know, adding a couple of key names to our registry or something that, you know, is always on our mind and focus. We've not set a date for, you know, when we're going to go around and make those rounds and try and, you know, very intentionally bring in somebody like that. You know, PDAC was actually very opportune for us. We were able to take advantage of being in Toronto and had a number of productive conversations that may bear fruit down the road. And I think that's the great thing about PDAC is you're able to plant a lot of seeds. So
right, okay. And as you kind of move forward as well, I mean, any looking to see any sort of changes at the board level, or, you know, do you feel that you can sort of outsource and manage conversations with you know, potential operators and builders of mine?
So we have had some changes in the board. You will have noticed that we appointed Mike Sylvester to the board. Earlier this year, a really strong technical person, operations experience, project development. Really, really pleased to have Mike join the board. You may have noticed that a longtime director, Randy Epler, passed away a month ago, and we've nominated Pat Keenan to be elected by the shareholders at the upcoming AGM. And so there's going to be a dynamic. It's been a long time in coming, but we're actually starting to see some pretty significant refreshment in our board of directors. And there will be, over the course of the next year or two, there will be some additional replacements. I mean, I know that some of the directors have plans to step off in the next year or two. So I think that from a board perspective, that we're going to see some very interesting changes in the face of the board of directors and the collective skills and experience that sit on the board over the next, it's starting now and it'll continue over the next 12 and 24 months.
Right. Okay. And obviously condolences for Randy Epler and to his family, of course. Fred, just kind of finish off. You're at the conference. I know you got to rush back, and thank you for making the time to come and talk to us, finding a quiet corner to come and talk to us. What would success look like for you at the end of this conference? If you look back next week, you know, what would you hope to have achieved?
Well, certainly our meeting schedule is filled with a lot of money managers from family offices. And, having success for us would be that, we have one or two, on the low side, four or five of these groups that say, you know what, there's a tremendous opportunity here with Vista Gold and Mount Todd, and we're going to go out and make, establish a holding in the company in the market, and begin to watch and grow our holding over time. That would be the biggest measure of success for us, is that from these groups that we meet with, that they we see genuine interest, and that translates into investments made in Vista Gold.
Brad, look, appreciate your time today. Go get them.
Thank you.